The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. Happy September 23rd, 2020. There are always reasons for things. Or as Peter Falk put it in The In-Laws, oh, there's reasons. I mean, you know, I don't just do things. There's always a valid reason. When you hear Joe Biden speak heartfully and tearfully of his son, Beau, you wonder once in a while why he doesn't talk about his son, Hunter. Now, I know there's a general rule that in politics, family is supposed to be off limits. But what if when the family is grown, adult and engaged in public work? What if when a candidate puts their family into play? One of the curiosities, one of the many during the Ukraine investigation, was how Joe Biden got to say once that the involvement of Hunter was thoroughly, and he got to say once that the involvement of Hunter was thoroughly investigated and there was nothing to the story. The mainstream media never asked what or where that investigation was. They just dropped it. Joe Biden got to say it was investigated, there was nothing to it, and they dropped it. Quite a luxury. But then there was the Iowa voter who confronted Joe on this, and Joe called him a damned liar. Then went on to say to him, quote, "You want to check on my shape? Let's do push-ups together. Let's run. Let's do whatever you want to do. Let's take an IQ test," close quote. I'm guessing Joe Biden wouldn't offer that now. But there was an investigation. Finally, a real one. And the results came out this morning. I quote from the Daily Wire. A bombshell report from the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs and the Committee on Finance makes a series of damning new allegations against Hunter Biden, the son of Democratic presidential nominee. That's the headline. Guess what, by the way? As of 8:08 this morning, you would not read about it at the websites of CNN, The Washington Post, or The New York Times. I stopped checking on the others, and then shortly thereafter, the stories out of Louisville, Kentucky, took over the rest of the news feeds. The New York Times, prior to the Breonna Taylor story, after several reports on the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, put on its front page something about John Bolton, his book, in the White House. Trying to regen that story up, I guess. Maybe in a month they'll try to revive the Woodward book, too. Might as well try and revive stories if there's still some milking to do. Old stories, nothing stories, when they have come and gone and yet not quite done the damage the original people or the media wanted. The Washington Post did the same thing this morning with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And then this, I kid you not, talking of old stories where they think there's still some milking to do, this headline, quote, "Allegations of racism have marked Trump's term, becoming key issue as election nears," close quote. Honestly, how many times over 4 years have we been treated to that headline and similar? Maybe that's why we call this all fake news. It's just not new. But why not try to revive the story? Enough people haven't gotten the message yet, I guess. Donald Trump is a racist. I mean, Joe Biden still says it was Donald Trump's praise of white supremacists in Charlottesville that led him to decide he had to run for president, which means his entire run is based on a fraud. I mean, how do you say that a man who said, quote, "neo-Nazis and the white nationalists should be condemned totally," close quote, how do you say a man who said that praised white supremacists? Only if you live in the world of Lewis Carroll's, I guess, or George Orwell's. At CNN, you don't get the Hunter story, but you got, quote, "Harry and Meghan weigh in on the upcoming presidential election," close quote. I guess we couldn't find the children of Prince Rainier of Monaco. So this is what I mean, as I said yesterday, when I say it's harder to be a conservative than a liberal in America. We constantly have to tell people the news ourselves while the major media buries it and instead gives us the old razzle-dazzle of important things like Meghan Markle's views on the election. Billy Flynn, the attorney in the musical Chicago, explained it all perfectly. Give him the old razzle-dazzle, razzle-dazzle him. Give him an act with lots of flash in it, and the reaction will be passionate. Give him the old hocus-pocus, beat and feather him. How can they see with sequins in their eyes? So here are some of the report's key findings that once upon a time might have interested the folks at CNN, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. You know, back before they became the communications arm of the Democratic Party. In early 2015, the former acting deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, Ukraine, George Kent, raised concerns to officials in Vice President Joe Biden's office about the perception of a conflict of interest with respect to Hunter Biden's role on Burisma's board. Kent's concerns went unaddressed, and in 2016, he emphasized in an email to his colleagues, quote, "The presence of Hunter Biden on the Burisma board was very awkward for all U.S. officials pushing an anti-corruption agenda in Ukraine," close quote. In October 2015, senior State Department official Amos Hochstein raised concerns with Vice President Biden himself, as well as with Hunter Biden, that Hunter Biden's position on Burisma's board enabled Russian disinformation efforts and risked undermining U.S. policy in Ukraine. The awkwardness for Obama administration officials continued well past the Obama presidency. Former Secretary of State John Kerry had knowledge of Hunter Biden's role on Burisma's board, but when asked about it at a town hall event in Nashua, New Hampshire, in December of 2019, Kerry lied. He said, "I had no knowledge about any of that. None. No." Evidence to the contrary is detailed. Former Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland testified that confronting oligarchs would send an anti-corruption message in Ukraine. Kent told the committees that Zlochevsky was an odious oligarch. However, in December 2015, instead of following U.S. objectives of confronting oligarchs, Vice President's staff advised him to avoid commenting on Zlochevsky and recommended he say, "I'm not going to get into naming names or accusing individuals." Hunter Biden was serving on Burisma's board when Zlochevsky allegedly paid a $7 million bribe to officials serving under Ukraine's prosecuting general Vitaly Yarima to shut the case against Zlochevsky. Kent testified that this bribe occurred in December 2014, 7 months after Hunter joined Burisma's board. And after learning about it, he and resident legal advisor and the resident legal advisor reported the allegations to the FBI. Hunter Biden was a U.S. Secret Service protectee from January of 2009 to July 8, 2014. A day before his last trip as a protectee, Time published an article describing Burisma's ramped-up lobbying efforts to U.S. officials and Hunter's involvement in Burisma's board. Before ending his protective detail, Hunter Biden received Secret Service protection on trips to multiple foreign locations, including Moscow, Beijing, Paris, Seoul, Tokyo, Milan, Florence, and many others. In addition to the over $4 million paid by Burisma for Hunter Biden's and Archer's board memberships, Hunter Biden, his family, and Archer received millions of dollars from foreign nationals with questionable backgrounds. Archer received $142,000 from Kenjis Rakishev of Kazakhstan, purportedly for a car, the same day Vice President Joe Biden appeared with Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk and addressed Ukrainian legislators in Kiev regarding Russia's actions in Crimea. Hunter Biden received a $3.5 million wire transfer from Elena Baturina, the wife of the former mayor of Moscow. Hunter Biden opened a bank account with Gong Guangdong to fund a $100,000 global spending spree with James Biden and Sarah Biden. Hunter Biden had business associations with Yi Jianming, Gong Wendong, and other Chinese nationals linked to the communist government and the People's Liberation Army. Those associations resulted in millions of dollars in cash flow. Hunter Biden paid non-resident women who were nationals of Russia or other Eastern European countries and who appear to be linked to an Eastern European prostitution or human trafficking ring. Close quote. There's a lot more. As David Riaboy tweeted, there is no scenario wherein the son of the vice president legitimately receives million-dollar wires from the wife of a foreign politician, the only billionaire female in Russia. But of course, we must continually be told Russia influenced the Trump campaign in 2016. But of course, Donald Trump is a racist. But of course, Donald Trump will break norms by nominating a Supreme Court justice when a vacancy occurred or any other day of the week. As Nancy Pelosi said, we could impeach him every day. But of course, we all know better, don't we? We see through this. I know we do. The question is, what of people who don't follow the stories as we do? Well, that's our job here. When asked how we expand the message, here's your means. You have not given up your First Amendment rights to speak and write. But now you know perhaps why the left is so committed to canceling and to censoring. As I say, or as Peter Falk says in The In-Laws, there's always reasons. There's always a valid reason. And that, among others, is why we do take the nomination of a new Supreme Court justice so seriously. After all, the First Amendment, indeed almost all of all our rights, are on the line. They've been put there by the left. Take it seriously. They do. Now, as I said, a few words on the news out of Kentucky. I suppose I may sound like a bit of a broken record here, but those who understand the fallibility and imperfectibility of man, unlike in utopian socialism, understand things could be a lot better. Things can and do go wrong. Obviously, things went very wrong in the events that led to the death of Breonna Taylor. If her boyfriend didn't fire on police, the police likely would have not fired back. If the whereabouts of Breonna's ex-boyfriend, Jamarcus Glover, who the police were looking for and had a warrant for, were better known, the police would have never gone to Breonna's apartment. And there are probably tens or hundreds of other decisions that might have been better made as well. Mostly, I think, Jamarcus Glover's, but others as well. And if they had gone differently, Breonna would most likely be alive today. That all said, we take for granted the normalcy of a city having to shut down over an impending grand jury decision. But that's what Louisville did this morning, fully shut down, went on an alert, called in the National Guard in fear of riots. And we just all take that as normal. It's not normal. It has become normalized. That is what is ongoingly unhealthy here. I probably sound like a broken record on this too, but we ignore Abraham Lincoln at so much of our peril. Starting with his Lyceum Address, delivered as early as 1838, he warned about a moment of anarchy going on in America, then not wholly unlike what is going on here now. He said, quote, "When men take it in their heads today to hang gamblers or burn murderers, they should recollect that in the confusion usually attending such transactions, they will be as likely to hang or burn someone who is neither a gambler nor a murderer as one who is, and that acting upon the example they set, the mob of tomorrow may and probably will hang or burn some of them by the very same mistake. And not only so, the innocent, those who have ever set their faces against violations of laws in every shape, alike with the guilty, will fall victim to the ravages of mob law. And thus it goes on, step by step, till all the walls erected for the defense of the persons and properties of individuals are trodden down and disregarded. But all this is even not the greatest of evils. By such examples, by instances of the perpetrators of such acts going unpunished, the lawless in spirit are encouraged to become the lawless in practice. And having been used to no restraint but dread of punishment, they thus become absolutely unrestrained. Having ever regarded government as their deadliest bane, they make a jubilee of the suspension of its operations and pray for nothing so much as its total annihilation. While on the other hand, good men, men who love tranquility, who desire to abide by the laws and who enjoy their benefits, who would gladly spill their blood in the defense of their country, seeing their property destroyed, their families insulted, and their lives endangered, their persons injured, and seeing nothing in prospect that forebodes a change for the better, they become tired of and disgusted with a government that offers them no protection, and are not much averse to a change in which they imagine they have nothing to to lose, close quote. In other words, riots and anarchy are violent, of course, in and of themselves, but they corrode something much more, all of us. And they take down the innocent with the guilty. Somewhere, somehow, we need to get back to a point that understands there is a better response than tearing down this temple of liberty when an offense comes. Somewhere, somehow, we need to be wary of rushing to extremes, both in language and responses to things we do not like. Somewhere, somehow, we have to remember we rule by ballot, not bullets, here. And that though the word decency may be at great discount in our culture, this is still not yet Kabul or Xinjiang or Ramallah or Gaza City. And we don't want it to be. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Don't forget to pre-order Dinesh D'Souza's latest film, Trump Card. It exposes what's unique about modern socialism, who's behind it, why it's evil, and how we can help President Trump to stop it. To pre-order your video on demand and DVD, go to watchtrumpcard.com now. That's watchtrumpcard.com. We'll have Dinesh D'Souza on the show, talk about it a little more next week. I had a call from a friend of mine, and he, really smart guy, runs a bank back east, and we went to college together. And he was giving me a heck about, you know, something we really both agree on, you've heard me talk about here a little bit, which is the experts on TV, you know, especially the political experts. He said, you know, I just saw 25, if not 55 times, during the 2016 election, experts, and you know their names, you know their faces, saying, well, if Trump doesn't win Florida, he can't win. He has to win Florida. Trump has to win Florida. He goes, and they were just all wrong. If you go back and look at the Electoral College vote, he won without Florida. He still beat Hillary Clinton without Florida. Who are these people? Who are these experts? And I was thinking, you know, you have that kind of expert, to be sure. But you also have just these treads and retreads from previous administrations who, you know, get put on, of course, corporate boards, which is certainly not my business. It's the corporation's business, I guess, if they want bad advice. They get to run think tanks, but they get put on TV all the time for their wizened opinions. They're smart and I think that's the right word, wizened. Wizened opinions. Maybe it isn't, but W-I-S-E, wise opinions, that's what I'm shooting for, not wise with a Z, meaning old. But, you know, their purported expertise. So you have a John Kerry. We played the audio last week after Donald Trump got Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates to sign a deal with Israel. Someone thought it would be fun to go back and see what John Kerry was saying in 2016 when he was Secretary of State. And of course he said this. Do you have time to play it real quick?
There will be no separate peace between Israel and the Arab world. I want to make that very clear to all of you. I've heard several prominent politicians in Israel sometimes saying, well, the Arab world's in a different place now. We just have to reach out to them and we could work some things with the Arab world and we'll deal with the Palestinians. No. No, no, and no.
Four no's on that. Then, as I was saying in my monologue, in New Hampshire last year at a campaign event, John Kerry said he had no knowledge about any of that. None, no, meaning Hunter Biden's relationship with Burisma and the problems it was causing. I had no knowledge about any of that. None, no. Well, you read this new Senate report today, and it says, I'll read you directly, Kerry was briefed about Hunter Biden, Burisma, and Christopher Hines the day after Burisma announced Hunter Biden joined its board. Additionally, Secretary Kerry's senior advisor sent him press clips and articles related to Hunter Biden's board membership. This appears to be yet another example of high-ranking Obama officials ignoring Hunter Biden's association with Burisma. Why does anyone listen to John Kerry anymore? They don't know what they're talking about. And they lie. Little Bellamy Brothers there for you. 34 past the hour means it's time for our culture and economy update with John Dombrowski from Grand Canyon Planning Associates. GrandCanyonPlanning.com is his website. JD, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Nice to have you, sir. Nice to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got for me on this day in history? I have something for you.
Well, I don't know if it's the same, but September 23rd, 1875?
No.
Billy the Kid was arrested for the first time. Yes, and that was for stealing laundry, so... For a basket of laundry.
If that only ended there.
You know, and that's the problem.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the problem.
You know,
yes. Yeah, that is the...
Laundry leads
yes,
to other,
exactly.
Your dirty laundry.
You break one small law, yeah. You end up breaking dirty, bigger ones.
Your
you
know? Dirty laundry leads
your
to
dirty
other.
Dirty laundry. Yes, I was going to tell you about the Nixon Checkers speech. We speechwriters think of that as one of the great speeches ever done. 1952, Richard Nixon appealed to the American people. Wow. Anyway, we'll talk more about that later in the show. But
okay.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit, if I could, just about where our economy is today.
Yes, sir.
There was a story over from our friends who used to work at the Investors Business Daily. They have a website, Issues Insights.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that the economy on many levels is doing much better than could have been predicted.
Yeah, and they do point out a few different areas that they believe, you know, are not being reported. You know, when you look at the economy and you look at the recovery that we've seen, it's not necessarily reported as accurate as maybe the numbers really do show. The U.S. economy added 1.8 million jobs in July, beating expectations. It says here jobs numbers in July beat expectations for the third straight month. Corporate earnings beat expectations. The economy, the U.S. Consumer sentiment is at a six-month high, and home sales, as we've all seen, have just been, you know, hitting it out of the park here. So these are all positives for the economy, and we still talk about this V-shaped recovery.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that we still, Seth, are uncertain about is that we're trying to get another round of stimulus.
Right.
Don't know if it's going to happen before the election. And that's a real challenge for some people out there and for small businesses. But the medium-sized businesses, is if you look at the companies that reported in the S&P 500, many of them overperformed of what the reduced expectation was going to be at the time. So 83% of, I think, the S&P 500 companies is what this article says, beat expectations for the second quarter of the year, which is just after COVID-19 hit. So it's really interesting to see these statistics versus what maybe some of the media is reporting out there.
Yeah, there is, as we've talked about before, as I talk about a lot too, there's been an interest in making things, putting things in a panic mode, making things sound as bad as they possibly can. Worst case scenarios, always on the eve of destruction. And we had that with unemployment too. This article talks about all the prognostications, all the predictions of unemployment going anywhere from, and it cites the sources, Goldman Sachs said it would peak at 15%, but you had Federal Reservists saying that it was going to go to 32%. You had a 538 saying 20%. It peaked
it's
at 14.7.
All over the board.
Yeah, but it peaked at 14.7, and we're now at 8.5.
And many predicted it would be much higher than 10 by the end of the year.
Right. Yeah.
So, it's really amazing the recovery that we have seen, but there's still so much more work to do.
Yes, sir.
You know,
we
certainly don't want to just think everything is great. It's
not. No.
But we certainly can feel better that the recovery has certainly been a lot more rapid than what had been reported.
Right. And not trying to say that things are as bad as they should be or could be also entails the obligation, as you pointed out, to not put too rosy a scenario on it and say things are great. But in not saying things are horrible and not saying they are great means they are manageable.
Yes, they're yes.
And that's what I think is the important role for people like you and me.
And here's where we look at it from a financial planning perspective, Seth, is that, you know, people are concerned about what's happening out there and they're worried about the election. They're worried about a variety of different things. Worried should they be invested right now.
Right.
And, of course, everybody's different, so I can't just make a blanket statement that, yes, you should stay invested. But what I would say is, again, and I've said this 1,000 times on the show, Seth, time is going to be the critical factor in anyone's financial plan. How much time do you have to allow your funds to, you know, be invested in the stock market?
Yep.
And that's the critical factor. And if you're questioning what you're doing, how you should be invested, allocated and such during these difficult times, please reach out to me. I'm happy to sit down and talk with you about that. You can go to my website, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, and schedule an appointment there.
Nicely said. Nicely done, John.
All right, Seth. Securities and Advisory Services offered to Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John. Talk
Have
to
a
later.
Great night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I know a lot of you are still doing, still have to do a lot of video and social media conferencing rather than meeting in person. If you are, I want you to check out squadpod.com. Squadpod.com/Seth. Squadpod is a great tool that allows you to talk about what you like, when you like, with whomever you choose without worrying about censorship, intellectual property loss, advertising, advertisers listening in and then stalking you on the internet. There's no tracking or selling of customer profiles. They have a ton of great features that the other guys don't have. They respect your free speech and they respect your privacy. Collaborate with all your teams. Screen share, chat, share files, video conference through SquadPod. Squadpod.com/Seth. Lot to do here. And this may sound circuitous. It's not. So follow me as I do this. I was mentioning to John that today's the anniversary of what was famously known as the Checkers speech Richard Nixon gave to the nation in 1952 as he was running for vice president. Think about how close to the election this was. And there were great calls for him in the media, of course, to step down as the vice presidential nominee. Maybe the inverse or reverse of what a lot of people are thinking may happen with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris the other way around. But in any event, the tack was to go after Nixon. And Nixon gave this tremendous speech on televised speech called the Checkers speech, named after his dog. I think it was a Cocker Spaniel, right, that he held up and said, well, we received this dog, Checkers, and we love him, and we're not letting him go. And I was reviewing that speech, as I mentioned to John. You know, people who are in the speech writing business or used to be, I'm somewhere in the middle, I suppose, of that category, trajectory. They know of the Checkers speech, you know, because we study great rhetoric and that sort of thing. And I was revisiting it, reviewing it, and I just, his conclusion, 1952, I just wanted to play it for you because when we talk here these days about Marxism or socialism in America, I know it rings odd to a lot of ears, but the truth of the matter is the conservative movement from the 50s forward, particularly up until, I don't know, from the founding of National Review, roughly 1951 or two, to up until probably the late 70s, this was something we cared and talked a lot about. Particularly did we do so in the late 60s with all the Soviet Union funding of domestic left here in America. And, of course, all we've learned from the Venona Report since then. It was fairly common to worry about it and fairly normal. Listen to how Nixon, vice presidential nominee, spoke to the nation and concluded this speech. Conservatives here? Donald Trump, Mike Pence, the folks at the Federalist Talk Radio. I don't think anyone has spoken as strongly and as directly as Richard Nixon in 1952. It was a plea to keep him on the ticket. He was kept on the ticket. I just thought it would be a fun travel.
But just let me say this last word. Regardless of what happens, I'm going to continue this fight. I'm going to campaign up and down in America until we drive the crooks and the communists and those that defend them out of Washington. And remember, folks, Eisenhower is a great man, believe me. He's a great man. And a vote for Eisenhower is a vote for what's good for America.
We're going to drive the crooks and the communists out of Washington. I don't think Donald Trump has said anything so strong as that. But that was the rhetorical coin of the realm back then. It was, and it should be again when we think about what we're confronting with China. Look, Louisville today. Newt Gingrich on Fox was censored for talking about the potential funding, not the potential, the actual funding by George Soros and his foundations of a lot of the riots on the streets. Well, today this picture was going around, the video was going around, of a very curiously placed U-Haul van in Louisville, Kentucky, where the decision on Breonna Taylor indictments were to come out. And this U-Haul van had activists coming out of it and handing out protest and riot materiel. Shields, riot gear, signs. Someone was yelling, "Shields, we've got shields. Come and get your shields. Come and get your riot gear." Now, it would not be very hard if, you know, average people can take videos of this. The police are obviously quite busy, but others to ask and, if necessary, need to get court orders or subpoenas from places like U-Haul to find out who paid for the rental of the van. It would not be that hard to do. And we should know, if violence takes place, if lawlessness takes place in these cities, as it has in other cities, Kenosha, Portland, Seattle, then let's go after those who are funding it. Material support. That's what it's called. Material support. It wouldn't be that hard to do. Look, I got a lot of calls today about, are we going to see riots anew over the Breonna Taylor news? All I can say is, thank goodness for Daniel Cameron. He's the Attorney General of Kentucky who led the press conference today. And was the right man at the right time at the right place for it. Many of you may remember we played portions of his speech at the Republican National Convention. He was so persuasive talking about beautiful American history and the race games that the Democrats were playing. But Daniel Cameron just did, a very good, decent, emotional job of handling a very touchy situation. But I don't want us to get used to the new normal that whenever a decision is going to come out of a court, be it a grand jury or a petite jury, that we just accept that we have to shut the city down lest there be people who can't handle it and themselves and take to rioting. This is not something we should get used to. It is not something normal. There's no such thing as a judicial system if every time a decision is unpopular to a certain segment, that certain segment of a population, whoever they are, whatever they stand for, whatever they want to the contrary, gets a free pass to shut down the entire city. It's not normal. There's no point in having a judicial system. There's no point in submitting to that kind of blackmail and bribery of violence and threat of violence either. It looks like this grand jury did not do that. I hope the presence of the National Guard and the police and the calming words of Daniel Cameron were the salve today so that it won't happen tonight. Welcome back. 602-508-0960. Got some great guests coming up for you. The rest of the show, we have Andy Biggs in the next hour. We have Eric Trump joining us. He's in Phoenix. He's going to talk to us about why he was here. Do you realize that the debates, the first presidential debates, are a week from yesterday? Chris Wallace, I guess, will be moderating the first round, and he released the topics. Unfortunately, there won't be anything on foreign policy, at least not by what he released in that first series. I think that's a topic we ignore at our peril. I was talking about this with Brandon Weikert the other day. people vote, I think, first and foremost on the economy. There's been more attention to, of course, of late, that people also vote on judicial nominations and, you know, the senators who are going to advise and consent, and, of course, the president who's going to nominate federal court appointees, including the Supreme Court. And people, we've had callers from time to time ask about this because you don't see a lot of ads about foreign policy. But people do think about that. People do think about it a lot, and they should, and they need to, when you think about the ineptitude of the foreign policy worldview of so many in the past. We played you some of John Kerry's earlier in the show when it comes to the Middle East. Turns out that's obviously one of the touchiest and most difficult of areas that Donald Trump, to many's criticism to the contrary, ended up doing a better job with than probably the past four presidents combined already thus far, first term. Not a small thing to have accomplished, and I think that obviously drives the Democrats crazy. And he's put China back on the table. You know, a good thing he did there, especially as more and more stories are coming out about what is going on in China. There's a piece in the Wall Street Journal I want to talk to you about. There's a new report out of the Heritage Foundation. Not that we needed a new report, but the ongoing decimation the Chinese are engaging in Xinjiang, while we are obviously put through the ringer by activists on the left about this nation's history, they just turn a total blind eye to what's going on present day in China, particularly in the Xinjiang province. Whatever happened to that ESPN story of the NBA basketball camps that were being sponsored in Xinjiang in July? That just came and went. The Chinese lobby is very strong, and the NBA is very complicit in it. But what's going on with Uyghurs? If you care about the Me Too movement, if you care about slavery, look at this Heritage report. Uyghur women are subject to forced medication that stops menstruation, forced abortions, surgical sterilizations, because China's goal is to eradicate future generations of Uyghurs by maliciously and ruthlessly controlling Uyghur reproduction, amongst other forms of abuse going on there. Do people care about that? Or do they just care about what happened here 160 years ago?